You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Spring, is that you? Warmer temps mean new Allbirds styles. Meet the new Superlight Collection. The lightest ever shoes from Allbirds, now in fresh colors. These must-have travel shoes have a lighter-than-air feel and barely-there fit that made them the most packable shoes ever. Plus, they're comfy right out of the box. That means more comfort and less baggage. Experience how Allbirds is redefining comfort. Visit Allbirds.com and use code SUPER24 for a free pair of socks with a purchase of $48 or more. That's Allbirds.com, code SUPER24.
Hello and welcome to the Football Fanalytics podcast in association with 23. This is the show that explores the ever-growing world of football analytics and takes on the many tactical and topical discussions within the game. It's episode 63 and we're looking across Europe's top leagues this week. My name is Mark Carey and joining me as ever is my good friend Ryan Bailey. Ryan, how are we doing, mate?
Mark, I'm very good. I'm ripping up my notes for what I was going to have as the first intro to this episode, which I'm not ripping them up. I'm just putting them on hold for 2 seconds because I was just looking on Twitter, and after our, we had a very good response to the managers episode last week, but I tongue in cheek on Saturday morning decided to tweet out who would be the gaffer out of me and you of Fanalytics FC after we'd had a couple of messages from listeners sort of, you know, discussing that what was a very serious question. And to my pleasant surprise, Mark, there was 47% of people said me.
Oh, did they? Yeah, I want to know the results of this. Go on, walk me through it then.
So it's 47% me, which I'm guessing people were just being kind, or it's maybe a kind of a knee-jerk reaction to, well, we can't have him in charge of the analytics department, which I think is absolutely fair. You had 23%, which again, seems a bit harsh, you know, but, well, it is poor, but surely everyone is surely thinking that you're going to have bigger and better roles in terms of the kind of driving the club forward with recruitment and the data side of things. I'm hoping that's what they're thinking, or it really doesn't say a lot about you as a sort of a managerial presence.
Thanks very much. Thank you.
What I thought was quite alarming, though, was how I just put an optional third, recruitment needed, and 30% of people said that. So, yeah, I mean...
Oh, wow. So more people said recruitment needed than voting for me.
Yeah, they did. Brilliant. But like I'm saying, though, I think that you would have been the analytical choice, whereas I'm not really sure if 30% of people didn't think that either of us were any good. Well, obviously, you're going to be in the analytics department. So I'm not really sure what my role would be. Maybe it is actually going to be social media manager, you know, considering I was building the listener interaction. But anyway, just that's just something. I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Well, I'm utterly deflated, to be honest. I genuinely didn't know the answer to the poll that you put out. But if any of the listeners want to clarify why they voted as such, I'd love to know. I can just as easily keep my thoughts to myself and we shut down the Football Fanalytics podcast. Maybe I'm taking this too personally. But yeah, I'd like to know what people think, whether they enjoy the podcast.
He'll take his analytics department elsewhere.
Yeah, I can always keep these thoughts in my own head. But no, that's a fun one.
I think there's one thing to say for certain, that if that did happen, then it'd just be me talking to myself, not knowing anything about football analytics. So let's just make it up and change that stat. Everyone wanted you as the manager, so there we go. But anyway,
no, you don't have to butter me up. Do not worry. But I do think there was a great response to the manager episode, and I think as we said, as the weeks have gone by or days have gone by, there's been more thought of just how much there should be a part two to this. So I think stay tuned for more on that sort of topic.
I think part two is absolutely on the cards, like you say. The thing that I thought I'd start this episode with, I was going to ask you, when you were, we've done in the past a sort of question on when you were growing up playing football, what kind of football boots did you wear? I know you had the sort of the 2006 Gerrard Predators in their day. I can't remember if they're the Absolutes or whatever, but I remember that was what you always said. Now, if you were a highly sought after professional footballer, which neither of us were, sadly, would you have been a Nike athlete, an Adidas athlete, or another brand athlete if you had the choice, do you reckon?
Adidas, hands down, next question.
Would you? Yeah. Why is that?
I don't know. I've just always liked Adidas, probably to do with maybe Predators. I think that's partly in it. But any sports top that I would have or choose, I would go to Adidas straight away. I really don't know why.
Interesting.
I'd probably say you're more Nike. Would that be fair to say?
Well, do you know what? I had Nike and Adidas boots growing up. Adidas were probably always my favourite in terms of boots.
But not just boots. Enough,
well, no, I think in terms of, like, you know, gym gear, football kit, I definitely did have some Nike kit. And I think a lot of my sort of sport tops now are Nike. Not that I'm sponsored by either, obviously. But yeah, I just wonder because I read a really interesting article, which was from The Athletic, actually. I can't remember who wrote it, but it was basically about the fact that Erling Haaland, at the moment, at the time of recording on Tuesday, Erling Haaland is currently not tied to a sponsorship brand. So I didn't realise that in the Man City promo photos and everything, he was wearing Puma boots. In the opening game of the season, I think he was wearing Nike boots. And in the second game of the season, he was wearing Adidas boots. And I just thought, you don't really get that as a phenomenon these days, do you? I can't remember the last time someone was kind of not attached to any sponsorship brand and didn't wear a certain kind of boot. So I just thought it was really interesting that one of the sort of biggest, most sought-after players was in that situation.
Yeah, isn't that odd? I don't know what the full article said within that context.
Well, it's basically saying he's in a fantastic position to negotiate a massive, massive deal with any of those brands, because obviously one of the most sought after athletes in the world, and they'd love to sign him up on a long term sort of agreement. So it's almost like him going, well, hang on, this is what I look like in these. I flirting with the idea of them all, basically.
Yeah,
it did make me think that, and I know this has been done before, probably in other circles, but it's something I used to think when I was younger. I always used to come up with a game in my brain of, like, if there was a brand tournament, so obviously you'd have your big ones, your Nikes, your Adidas, etc. But players who these days were associated to brand, imagine if you had a tournament. So I know that, like, Trent Alexander-Arnold, for instance, is like the number one at Under Armour, isn't he?
Under Armour, yeah.
Isn't Mane like New Balance? Mm-hmm. They'd be sort of like your mid-table ones. Puma, I think, are like sort of maybe the third on the list after Nike and Adidas, and you know, there'd be some sort of rogue ones in there. And I quickly googled an Adidas 11 that, wow, I thought I'd run past you to see who you think would win between an Adidas 11 and a Nike 11. So this was a live score one that was pulled together in February 2022, so a couple of months old. But in the Adidas 11, in goal they had Neuer. And then from right to left, it's Hakimi, Alaba, Ramos and Alba in defence. Salah, Kante, Kroos, Bernardo Silva and Messi sort of in the middle and wide. And then Benzema up front, which is a pretty fantastic, wow, Adidas 11, right?
Absolutely.
I'm guessing we're thinking of all these players in their peak. You then go to the Nike 11, which would be Alisson in goal, Cancelo, Diaz, Van Dijk, Alphonso Davies, Mbappe, De Jong, Kimmich, De Bruyne, Ronaldo and Lewandowski, all Nike-sponsored athletes. Wow. Now, that's a game I would like to see, whatever date it was, even if, you know, not everyone's in their prime. That's a good game of football, right, if you watch that?
That is a very good game of football. I'm just trying to process all of those names that you said and trying to fit them into some sort of formation. But that is a game I'd want to see.
Yeah, and I said that in a really bad order, but as in, like, that's just, I was just going from right to the left, but yeah.
Yeah, no, I've just about got it. I genuinely closed my eyes as you said that to try and work out where it would be. All the forward runs, all the different tactics already just flying around in my head. But it reminds me of, you know, when you're younger, you'd see, I think it was the Pepsi adverts where it would just be like all stars playing against each other and David Beckham and Raul exactly and that. Roberto Carlos, who granted all played for Real Madrid, but often players from all over Europe, they would, you know, get involved. And I would love to see just an all-star cast of Nike versus Adidas. That should happen if it isn't already.
It absolutely should. And then also Puma would be kind of like the rogue one. I mean, Neymar now I think has signed for Puma recently. He sort of defected from Nike in 2020, which is a big one. They've got Griezmann. Saint-Maximin is a Puma athlete. I know that Koulibaly is as well. Some really sort of left field shouts. I just thought it was a very interesting one. And then you'd have the people who played for Sondico at some point throughout
you and me there. At the back.
Yeah, basically. Anyway, just a fun thought for the midweek that I was Googling earlier.
I really like that. And I think the fact that we are speaking about European players or players not just exclusive to the Premier League is very relevant to this episode, Ryan, because I think we're going to look at the top five European leagues at the team level and at the league level. But you've set it up perfectly in terms of the theme. So without further ado, should we get cracking with that?
Let's do it. Mark, this is exciting. Why don't you tell the listeners about our new collaboration with Spitch? Tell them what Spitch is.
Yeah, we've been wanting to share this with the listeners for some time. So Spitch is basically a live fantasy football manager app, and you can pit yourself against other managers, basically. And the fun thing is that you can win real money in the process. And what's great is that you can compete across multiple leagues worldwide. So rather than just the Fantasy Premier League that we do, you can compete in other leagues like the German Bundesliga, the Premier League, of course, and others like the Champions League and the Europa League.
I mean, if it was like Fantasy Premier League, then we'd win absolutely nothing. But it's not like Fantasy Premier League because the difference is you can create a brand new lineup for each match day. So basically, no more selection regret when a player you've chosen is going through a bad run of form. What else is different, Mark?
Well, I think it's right up our street because it goes into greater depth with the analytics side, which is so true to the Football Fanalytics podcast. So it awards points for basically every action on the pitch. So things like passes, tackles, blocks, and shots, everything that you can think of, all count towards your match score.
So for the first time ever, we can cheer on a pot shot from miles away.
Exactly.
So make sure you sign up. Download the app and register now. Once you've registered, you can join the Football Fanalytics Podcast League. So come and get involved, play against me and Mark. The link is in our bio. Join Spitch now.
So let's talk Europe. Now, we are a few games into the domestic season across a lot of men's European football. There's two, maybe three games being played by everyone. And there's been some... I suppose there's been some surprises, Ryan. It's certainly thinking about the Premier League already, there's been some surprises. We've spoken about Brentford against Manchester United. I guess what this episode is going to be about is just how many surprises there are within a league. I mean, there's always some, you know, week by week, case by case. But more generally speaking, how predictable, I guess, is each league? Like, do you think when you think across the top five European leagues, is it pretty much nailed on that PSG win the French league? Is it pretty much nailed on that Bayern win the German Bundesliga? In Spain, granted, Barcelona aren't in the strongest position at the moment, but
yeah,
maybe there's a bit more of a 2-3 horse race there. Italy, I think, is more of an unpredictable one. Premier League at the moment, obviously Liverpool and Manchester City, no one seems to be threatening them. Do you think it's an interesting one of just how predictable and how many surprises you can throw up across the league?
Yeah, I definitely do. I think that it's been said a few times, hasn't it, in recent years? And it's been, you know, it's been forever really, hasn't it? But there's obviously a big six in England, which can be a little bit dull in the sense, I guess, that you want a league where everyone can compete and everyone is sort of has a chance of winning the league. But realistically, in the current climate, that's just not going to happen. But actually, surely the fact that we in the Premier League have a big six is actually a lot more varied than some of the other ones you just mentioned, because Germany comes to mind in terms of the team that haven't they won it like 10 in a row or something?
Yeah, well, this is
the Bundesliga.
This is the thing that kind of gave me the idea for this episode, and I do often hark back to The Athletic, but I do think it's just kind of brought a wider point that on Twitter and analytics Twitter of Michael Cox's piece. I don't know if you've read it, but it was essentially making a jovial, light-hearted argument that Bayern Munich should start every game 1-0 down because they are so dominant, and then see how much they would have won. And I think, as you say, they won the past 10 seasons, and even if they would have started every game in the past 10 years 1-0 down, they still would have won 3 titles, I think, which just goes to show how maybe unequal and unfair and how much of a one-horse race the German Bundesliga is to a greater or lesser extent. I know it's caused a bit of controversy, but it does just show that Bayern Munich are, you know, just in a league of their own, a league of one,
yeah,
on their own. So how much equality there is within the Bundesliga. And I thought it'd just be good to kind of see whether we could maybe dig into that from a numbers perspective. Is it backed up by the data? And just how much, yeah, you think it's a fair argument?
Well, I mean, it's a fun exercise to think about, if nothing else, in terms of, but it I mean, I don't know what the sort of argument against that is. I'm sure there are lots, but to me, it seems a bit, if they still would have won 3 titles with such a disadvantage, then that surely says everything you need to know about it, doesn't it? From a fairness perspective. But then I guess there's loads of caveats to it, which I'm sure you'll tell me about. And when we look at what the numbers are, but I mean, it can't be much fun, can it? If you're even a Dortmund fan. I mean, there was a time, wasn't there, 10 years ago when they might have been challenging. But was there a recent season where they were actually sort of up there and pushing the limit? I don't know too much, but I'd be interested to know if there was, because it just seems like Bayern just do their thing every year.
Yeah, well, there's been, like, Leipzig have been there or thereabouts at the top. Obviously, Dortmund, Wolfsburg had a really good season going back a few seasons ago now, where they really did genuinely push, back when Kevin De Bruyne was there.
Yeah.
They've been, a couple of seasons ago, they pushed for top four and got into the Champions League. But there's always, you know, some big teams who are there or thereabouts. But I don't think kind of genuinely pushing right to the final day when push comes to shove. But I think it's become more relevant, or as relevant, even this week. So you look at the weekend fixtures for Bayern Munich, and they won 7-0,
yeah,
against Bochum. Like, you know, you're not just winning 3-0 and taking your foot off the gas. Like, 7-0 seems to be a kind of a real disparity in quality between, you know, the top and the bottom.
Yeah.
And you think about, obviously, PSG as well in the French League. And granted, Lille did win the French League a couple of seasons ago. But it's just interesting to see PSG won 7-1 against Lille. And now that's probably an anomaly, you know, when you think of Lille, the quality of them as a club. They're not going to be in the lower echelons of the league. So take that into account. But it's not too surprising to see bigger score lines in these leagues. So, as I say, I just wanted to look at it in terms of that spread,
yeah,
from top to bottom, and try and think of a kind of a simple statistical way to look at it.
Yeah,
basically. So, of course, to do that statistically, you can look at it a few ways, really. But what I did was just look at the average and the spread. And I think we've spoken about this before as a simple statistical technique. But you can look at the mean,
yeah,
of the whole league in terms of maybe the points that they accrue across the whole season. So just an average being the mean. And I think we've spoken about it before, but we could also look at the standard deviation of the league and the points that teams accrue. And that's essentially, standard deviation is a statistical term, essentially looking at the variability of the numbers that you have. So if you have numbers ranging from 10 all the way up to 70 and everything in between within a league, then the standard deviation, the bigger the standard deviation, the larger the spread is.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Yep.
So, you know, if you, for example, you could have 10 teams who are on 40, or you could have 10 teams who range from, you know, 20 to 50. You've got a larger standard deviation, larger spread when you've got 10 teams on a different number.
Okay.
So by looking at the average and the spread, we can get an idea of just how much variation there is within a league. So essentially what I did was just look at that, just as simple as last season. Now, if I were to do that across the top 5 European leagues equally, it wouldn't necessarily be fair in terms of the average number of points, because the German Bundesliga has 18 teams. So you simply cannot accrue as many points within a, yeah, league season. So what I did was just look at the average points per game.
Okay.
Now, this is probably isn't the best way, but even just to show that the average points per game and the spread of that within a league. I don't even need to go into the exact numbers here, but in terms of the average, yeah, the average is higher in the Premier League, actually, just edging the Bundesliga in terms of the average number of points, which suggests that you've probably got a few, or very few, big teams who are pulling up the average, which is where your Manchester Cities, your Liverpools,
yeah, yeah,
your Bayern Munich come from. So that's keeping a high average. And the lowest average in terms of points per game is Spain, actually, La Liga, which again, really? Makes sense to me, I think, because they probably do have a... You don't really see, especially last season, you didn't really see anyone truly running away with it. Granted, Real Madrid did win it comfortably in the end, but not in the realms of like pushing for 100 points.
Yeah.
And I think everything within that, you've got a fairly good competition in kind of the middle ground of La Liga, where it isn't necessarily as predictable, shall we say.
Yeah.
So it was interesting to see that Spain had the lowest, and then the French league, then Serie A in the middle, and then German Bundesliga and the English Premier League as the highest average points per game.
Right.
So I think then what's sort of interesting to go along with that is the spread. So that standard deviation. And again, it links with what I said with La Liga, where it had the lowest spread. So from the top to the bottom, on average, Spain and the Spanish La Liga had the lowest variation. And then, yeah, as I say, the French Ligue 1. And then following that, the German Bundesliga. So even accounting for the fact that Bayern are, you know, ahead of the game,
yeah,
the sort of the competitiveness of the league as a whole doesn't have as big a variation as then Serie A. And the English Premier League had the biggest variation of the points accrued per game last season, which again probably makes sense when you think of the difference between a Manchester City and a Norwich City.
Yeah,
you know, they are the kind of worlds apart. It's not Norwich's fault that they keep going from Championship to Premier League, but there's a massive gulf in quality there, isn't there, when you think
Absolutely.
About it from the top to the bottom.
Absolutely. Do you find that, obviously it's slightly different for you, I guess, as well, because you're a Liverpool fan, that, you know, obviously your team has been in a title race with Man City most recently. Do you think teams outside of the big six, or outside of Bayern and Germany, outside of PSG, etc., do you think it's any less enjoyable for teams who are in the middle constantly? You know, like a Villa or a Brighton or a Southampton. I guess Southampton are sometimes flirting with the bottom, aren't they? But do you think it's any less enjoyable ever to not be competing like that? Like, do you ever think they think, well, is there a way to make our league more competitive and less spread?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, this is the thing about the spread here that I'm referring to, is obviously top to the bottom across the whole league. But in terms of, you know, if you were the fan, you think about things like trying to get into Europe. And now that they've introduced the Europa Conference League, for example, there's still attainable ways to try and get into the upper echelons of the league and actually start to have some away days, European away days. And I mean, Leicester City are a good example of that, from someone, you know, as a club who a decade ago, I think, is that be fair to say, wouldn't it? A decade ago, they'd have been in the Championship. So just how far they've come, I think that they are a good model for a club who could be like a Villa, who, let's not forget, Villa were European champions once upon a time. But yeah, there's plenty of clubs who I think, like a Brighton, who would have, you know, dreams of actually being in Europe at least. They're not going to threaten the top of the league, but you can still think that they could have it there. There's plenty of competition kind of within, as I say, probably from maybe 8th, which I think could still be a European place, down to 15th maybe. There's
probably
a cluster of teams that you could... There's not too much between them in terms of quality. So if you were at the top end of that, you'd be pushing for Europa Conference League, and, you know, things could then go up from there.
So that one was obviously on average points, looking at it. Could you look at it in different ways in terms of, I don't know, off the top of my head, like the sort of average XG in the league, or the goal scored, or something like that, as opposed to just looking at it via points?
Yeah, I mean, let's have it right. I did this in a very quick, rudimentary way, but just to show, I guess, proof of principle. But there's a bunch of ways that you could look at it. I think another way would be, so I think we've spoken about 538 before, which is a site which has publicly available data set, which can basically show a team's strength relative to everyone else basically across Europe. And they have a statistical model that basically gives them a ranking, a team strength ranking between 0 and 100. Now, you could look at the team's 538, it's called an SPI ranking. You could look at that and see the variation from top to bottom within each league to see whether the spread is there in terms of team strength, which I think could be another really interesting way, rather than taking in far more, I guess, underlying numbers, which we love, than just simply points, which can maybe be obviously skewed by the output, a bit of luck here and there to obviously accrue 3 points. So there's a whole host of different ways that you can do it. But I guess the principle being that you can look at spread really neatly by using standard deviation. And there was another really interesting article that I found going back some time now, but it was written by someone called Ben Griffiths, and it was, the title is Determining the Most Competitive Top UEFA League, which looks at it more broadly rather than just the top five European leagues.
Yeah.
And I must say, I haven't done this analysis before myself, and I'll link it in the bio, but for the more statistically minded listeners among us, Ben does a really interesting analysis called the Gini coefficient, and it's essentially a measure of inequality, and it's an economics statistical analysis and a term to basically measure inequality, and it's used normally to measure wealth or income inequality in countries. Yeah. So which is why it's more of an economics term, but you could basically apply it to measure the inequality of a league's points and the distribution within a season, similar to what I've just done in a really simple way. So you can use more advanced methods, this Gini coefficient, which, just funny, Gini as in Gini Wijnaldum, that's how it is spelled. Yeah. It's just always fun.
Not as in like the lamp one, no.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Gini as in Wijnaldum, not lamp. Thank you for clarifying. So I you know, that's just quickly to give a little flavor, but I'll put a link of that in the bio if people wanted to take a further look. But I just think this is a sort of a topical one, but also one, an evergreen question of just how competitive are the top five European leagues, and more broadly the leagues all across the world, because there can often be a massive disparity between the teams at the top and the teams at the bottom. And if, when it is that big, as you say, can you really enjoy it, the quality of the league as a whole, if you know each season it's going to be the same winners, likely to be those who are going to be there or thereabouts at the bottom? How, if it's too predictable, is it enjoyable? That's the question.
I mean, you know, I, like pretty much everyone else in the world, apart from a select few, was very outraged at the idea of the Super League when it was announced last April, and obviously very against it for many, many reasons. But you do have to beg the question, don't you, that if you took out all of the teams who had said that they were up for it, I know PSG and actually I think Bayern were some of the ones who weren't, maybe because they love the success they have. Right. But it would be interesting, wouldn't it, if you took out the top six teams in England and you had the other 14 mixed in with some other championship teams. It would make for a really interesting league, wouldn't it, in terms of seeing how that changed every year and who became the new sort of top players. And I wonder how, in terms of that spread, in terms of the way of spread, like we were just talking about, it'd be interesting to see how those numbers changed if you took out Man City, for instance. Do you know what I mean? Who are pulling up the rest of the average points and stuff. Do you know what I mean? It'd be really interesting to see how, if you took out a select few teams, how that number changed.
Yeah, true. Yeah, you could maybe take out, I'm trying to think, you could take out maybe some of the Champions League only teams and then just look again. It's something you can obviously play around with, but yeah, it does. It naturally, this conversation does feed into the Super League and how valid a point they have. And I'm with you. I don't agree with the idea of a Super League at all, for reasons that are to do with football and not to do with football. But all we want, I guess, as the viewer and as the fan in all leagues, is to make sure that it is competitive. And coming back full circle to the German Bundesliga and the article which suggested that it's just completely unfair with the way that Bayern Munich are, I do see that. I completely see that. Because when you win 10 back-to-back leagues, that does suggest that league, from a champion's perspective, from a title winner's perspective, isn't necessarily equal. There's a lot of inequality there right at the top end. So, yeah, as I say, a very topical episode, I think, but one that is also part of a wider point across recent years.
Absolutely. And also, you wouldn't want to lose the shock result factor. It's still absolutely brilliant, isn't it, when a lower league team get get a result against one of the big ones. So at least that's something. But yeah, no, nice one. That's very interesting.
True. Joe, yeah, we obviously spoke about it, as I say, with Brentford and Manchester United. And I'm glad that we've gone the whole episode without mentioning Manchester United against Liverpool. And for that reason, that's all the time we have this week.
You can't now do that, though. Now you've actually brought it up. You can't just do that.
No, I don't want to talk about it. Maybe we could have an episode on, well, Liverpool's misfortunes and Manchester United's rising, shall we say. Is this the start of something special in the Erik ten Hag era? Very, very early days. But I've been speaking to some people recently, Ryan, who are interested in coming on and doing an episode all things Manchester United. So that's Excellent. A bit of a teaser there, that we could maybe and should maybe do that in the coming weeks. So
absolutely,
we'll park Manchester United for now, but do stay tuned for that one soon, listeners. But if there's anything else that anyone wants us to cover in the coming weeks, we are absolutely all ears. We have ideas ourselves, but we are all ears if you'd like to hear any topic that we could cover for you. And of course, you know how to do that. You can get in contact with us on Instagram or Twitter at FanalyticsPod, or of course we are on email fanalytics.pod@gmail.com. Enjoy the rest of your week, everybody. We will see you and we will be with you next week. Enjoy the rest of your week.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.